a brief home video of a mother who, while feeding her little baby, pretends to sneeze. Watch this. Come on, Mom, one more time. Just one more time. I love that. Don't you wish life could always be like that? Fun and games, laughter and delight. But of course, it's not. Yeah, sometimes life is like When Harry Met Sally, you know, a feel-good movie. But other times, it's a lot more like Nightmare on Elm Street. A couple weeks ago, we talked about how the real test of a person is not how they respond in times of triumph, but how they respond in times of testing. Let's dig a little deeper into that today, because heaven knows these are times of great testing. You know how sometimes you hear a story that stops you in your tracks? That happened to me recently when someone in our congregation, Shannon Michaels, sent a story to me. It stopped me in my tracks. I found myself thinking, this story manages to capture, better than anything I've ever heard, what it looks like to live a life of faith. Oddly enough, it's a lizard story. I want to share it with you today. I hope it has the same impact on you as it did on me. And as you make your way through life, in times of great testing, I hope you'll always remember this story. God, what does it mean to live a life of faith? We're not asking what it means to be religious. We're asking a deeper question. What does it look like when faith penetrates our hearts so deeply it anchors us no matter what happens? Make that clearer to us today than ever before. We ask in the name of Jesus. Amen. So the story takes place in a house in Japan. The house is in the process of being remodeled. The builder tears into a wall that's to be removed. In Japan, houses typically have hollow open space between wooden walls. As the builder tears into the wall, opening it up, he discovers a lizard trapped inside. A nail driven through the wall had pierced through one of the lizard's feet, trapping it in place. The builder felt both pity and curiosity, because he knew that this wall had been put in place when the house was built 5 years earlier. The wall had not been touched since then. How was it possible that this lizard had managed to survive in that position, in that darkness, unable to move a single step for 5 long years. The builder stopped working to observe the lizard, to try to figure out, how has it survived? It didn't take long before he had his answer. Soon, another lizard appeared with an insect in her mouth that she dropped in front of the trapped lizard, who promptly gobbled it up. Ah, now the builder knew how the trapped lizard had survived. Every day, apparently for 5 years running, several times a day, that second lizard had hunted and trapped insects and brought meals to the trapped lizard, stubbornly refusing to give up on her partner. The builder wept at both the tragedy and the beauty of it all. When I heard that story, I teared up as well. It struck me that there is so much truth about life and faith embedded in that simple little story. The story appears to be true, but whether it's parable or history, whether it's something that happened in real time or parable, the truths in that story pierce the heart. There are two great characters in this story, of course, the lizard that gets trapped and the lizard that refuses to abandon her partner. Each of them has a great lesson of faith to teach us. Let's start by looking at the lizard who got trapped. Imagine if you were him. One day, everything's going great. You're running through the walls, chasing bugs. Life is good. But then, in the next moment, a nail shoots through the wall and pierces your foot, trapping you in place. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Imagine the emotions, the thoughts that coursed through that lizard in those first few moments after this tragedy happens. There's shock, disbelief, panic. This can't be happening to me. There must be a way out of this. God, I need your help. I can't move. But there's no answer. Day turns to night. The lizard's all alone. Until the other lizard finds him there. Rushes out, finds an insect, brings it, drops it. Starving, the trapped lizard eats it. Night turns to day. Day to night, night to day. Before long, several days have passed. And the trapped lizard begins to realize, this is the new normal. And he begins to ask all kinds of existential questions. Why is this happening to me? Why me? Why now? Where are you, God? But there are no answers. Just silence. Just the darkness. Every day the same. Life in freeze frame. Days give way to weeks. Weeks to months. Months to years. And somewhere along the way, the lizard finds himself thinking, I don't want to go on. I've had enough. I should end this. I should stop eating. Then his partner brings him his next meal, and he eats. That's a miracle. He eats his next meal, and then the next, and then the next. Each meal that he eats, a defiant miracle of faith, as he stubbornly refuses to yield to despair when life makes no sense. That is what faith looks like. The stubborn refusal to yield to despair, even when life makes no sense. When everything's going well in life, it's easy to have faith. The real test of my faith is how I respond when life makes no sense. Do you have that kind of faith? The faith to put one foot in front of another when it makes no sense. To eat the next meal, to smile the next smile, to laugh the next laugh, to defiantly worship. Because that's what faith looks like. Little Billy and his grandpa were out in the woods one night, making their way back to their cabin, shooing away the mosquitoes and the bugs as they walked through the woods. As they began to approach the cabin, Grandpa said, "Now, Billy, when we get to the cabin, we can't turn on the light right away. We've got to quickly sneak through the door, then slam it behind us so the bugs don't come in after us." So when they arrive at the cabin, that's what they do. Quickly slip through the door, slam the door. But two fireflies manage to fly in behind them. When little Billy sees this, he says, "It's no use, Grandpa. Now the mosquitoes are coming after us with flashlights." Do you ever feel like that? It's no use. I am up against an overwhelming force. I may as well give up. 4-year-old Jasmine was sitting at her grandma's computer, furiously plucking the keys. Grandma smiles and says, "What you doing?" Jasmine says, "I'm writing a story." Grandma says, "What's the story about?" Jasmine says, "I don't know, I can't read." Do you ever feel like Jasmine? You're in the story, but you can't decipher it. You're part of the story, but you don't understand. That's what Job felt like in today's Bible story. You're probably at least vaguely familiar with the story of Job, how everything was going great for Job until it wasn't. Life was good, unusually good, for Job until several tragedies in a row struck him. The first tragedy was when all of Job's young adult children were gathering together for a celebratory meal in the same house, and a whirlwind came and flattened the house and instantly killed all of his children in one fell swoop. Not long after that, Job lost all of his wealth. And sometime after that, Job lost his own health. Job chapter 2, verse 7, Satan inflicted loathsome sores on Job from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. Job used a broken piece of pottery to scrape himself and sat among the ashes. Verse 10, Job's wife said to him, "Do you still persist in your integrity? Curse God and die." Job, she says, "If I were you, I'd give up. God, I hate you. Why should I believe in you if you let this happen to me? I'm done. I am so done. I'm not going to eat anymore. I'm not going to put one foot in front. I'm not going to smile anymore. I'm over it." But Job doesn't do that. Instead, we're told in verse 10, Job said to his wife, "You speak as a foolish person would. Shall we receive good at the hand of God and not receive bad?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Job's wife in this story represents that voice in our heads that in times of great testing and trial, in times that make no sense, that voice says to us, "You should curse God and die. You should give up your faith. You should give up your life. Stop living. It's not worth it." But Job didn't yield to that. Instead, as you heard in the scripture reading, he sits in utter silence in his brokenness for 7 days and 7 nights. Then he begins to ask all kinds of questions that have no answers. But through it all, he keeps eating the next meal. He refuses to give up on life, and he refuses to give up on God. That's what faith looks like. Do you have that kind of faith? Not faith in the good times when it's easy, but a faith that runs so deep that everything can be falling apart around you, and you stubbornly refuse to yield to despair. Professor Tim Brown taught for many years at Hope College, a Christian college. One of his all-time favorite students from his decades of teaching was a young man named Tim Vanderveer. Tim was a great student, a hard worker, always ready to help others. He was tall, curly hair, broad shoulders. He had the world by the tail. Graduated, got a great job with Johnson Controls, promoted through the ranks. Everything was going great in Tim's life until it wasn't. Over the years, sporadically, Professor Brown and Tim would communicate with each other. One day, a call comes into the college switchboard. The receptionist says to Professor Brown, it's a Tim Vanderveer. Oh, put it through. Professor Brown says, hey, Tim, how you doing? The professor says at the other end of the line is a weak and trembling voice. Not so good, Professor. What's going on, Tim? I'm in the hospital in Grand Rapids. 3 years earlier, Tim had been diagnosed with leukemia. He put up a mighty struggle, but now he was in the last stages. Tim, is it okay if I come visit you? I'd like that. So the professor drives to Grand Rapids, walks into Tim's hospital room. His mom is sitting in the corner weeping. Tim is lying flat on his side on his bed, skin and bones, curly hair gone, gaunt eyes. A pillow propped between his rail-thin legs for comfort. He can't even lift his head as the professor walks in the room. So the professor gets on his knees next to the bed. Overwhelmed with grief, the professor doesn't know what to say. Eventually, Tim breaks the awkward silence. Through all of this, I've learned something. What is it, Tim? What have you learned? I've learned that life is not like a VCR. This was back in the 90s. The professor says, I don't understand, Tim. What do you mean? Not like a VCR. You can't fast forward through the bad parts. Another awkward silence. And then Tim speaks again. But I've also learned that Jesus Christ is in every frame. And right now, that's just enough. When life pushes you to the edge, trapped, stuck, harpooned, and you are tempted to give up, if you will look inside, you'll find something there deep inside you. It's a mystery. It's a miracle. We call it faith. An inexplicable strength to refuse to yield to despair, even when life makes no sense. If you are Jacob Blake, lying in a hospital bed paralyzed from 7 point blank shots in your back, fired by a police officer. And now you can't move. How do you get through that? If you're Chadwick Boseman, man, life is going great. You are making blockbuster movies at the pinnacle of your career in your early 40s. And the doctor tells you you have colon cancer. And for the next few years, you're slowly dying even as you're making these epic movies. Even as you're eating the next meal, smiling the next smile, role modeling and mentoring children. How do you do that? The answer is faith. That stubborn refusal to yield to despair, even when life makes no sense. I have a friend who his entire life has struggled with chronic depression. If you met him, you would never guess. He's very functional. But he once told me, there's not a day that goes by, but what I find myself thinking at some point, I should end this. I said, every day? Yeah, I said, every day. I said, how do you get through it? He said, I've just had to learn to tell myself that voice is not real, that it's part of my disease. So I take my medicine. And I push on. Like the lizard in our story, he eats his next meal and then his next meal. Every meal, a defiant, heroic miracle of faith. Faith is the stubborn refusal to yield to despair, even when life makes no sense. When life nails you to the wall, how will you respond? But of course, there is a second great character in today's story. There's the lizard that gets trapped, but there's also the lizard that refuses to give up on her partner. Imagine if you were her. Imagine as she begins to experience the trauma of the lizard that's trapped, I'm sure there must have been a voice inside of her that said, this is too much pain. I can't watch this. I can't do this for the rest of my life. I'm out of here. But she didn't yield to that voice. Every day for 5 years, several times a day, she hunts and traps and brings meals to her partner stubbornly, refusing to give up on him. We've already established through the first lizard that faith is the stubborn refusal to yield to despair when life traps you. Now, the second lizard reminds us that faith is also the stubborn refusal to give up on someone else when life traps them. We call it great faithfulness. A couple weeks ago in one of our church's Be Still and Know daily meditations, I shared with you a story from Deborah Power about a time she was giving her 3-year-old son Isaac a bath, and after the bath she wraps him up in a big fluffy towel, pulls him up on her lap to give him a big hug, and as she does so, she says to him, oh Isaac, you're getting so big, what are we going to do when you get too big for me to hold you on my lap? Without skipping a beat, little Isaac says, then I'll hold you, Mom. Life is like that. We get to take turns. Sometimes we need to be held. Other times it's our turn to do the holding, because everybody needs somebody sometime. Like this puppy dog in the Elizabethan color, suffering. Everybody needs somebody sometimes. Jeannie was spending the day with her granddaughter. Her granddaughter had been learning her colors So as they went throughout the day, from time to time, Grandma would point at something and say, "What color's that?" And a few minutes later, "What color's that? What color's that?" Each time, her granddaughter had the answer quick and accurate. But after 7 or 8 of these questions, there comes a point, Jeannie says, when her granddaughter sighs deeply and says, "Grandma, I think you should start figuring out some of this stuff for yourself." Yes, there are times in life when we need to fend for ourselves. Loving someone does not mean enabling them. Yet still, everybody needs somebody sometimes. Thank God for the people in our life who refuse to give up on us, no matter what. I read or saw a Pearls Before Swine comic strip recently that moved me deeply. I know it's odd to be moved by a comic strip, but this was the most profound comic strip I've ever seen. It was entitled The 6 Stages of Marriage. In the first frame of the cartoon, 2 newlyweds are standing there in tux and wedding gown, and the thought bubble above their heads says, "You're the best thing that ever happened to me." In the second frame, that same couple is sitting on the couch at opposite ends of the couch, backs turned to each other, and the thought bubbles above their heads say, "You're not as great as I thought you were." In the third frame, you see the couple face to face, vigorously arguing, and the thought bubble above their heads says, "You need to be changed." In the fourth frame, you see the same couple facing forward with a look of realization on their faces. The thought bubble above their heads says, "You can't be changed." The fifth frame shows the same couple, their hair now grayer, hugging one another. And the thought bubble above their heads says, "I accept you as you are." The sixth and final frame shows the husband sitting next to his wife's tombstone. And the thought bubble above his head says, "You're the best thing that ever happened to me." That's beautiful. We call it great faithfulness. It's what we see in the biblical story of Ruth and Naomi. Again, you're probably at least vaguely familiar with the story. Naomi is the mother-in-law of Ruth. Naomi experiences great tragedy in her life. Her husband dies, and then her 2 adult sons die, including the son that is the husband of Ruth. So now Naomi and Ruth are both left as widows at a time in history when surviving as a widow was treacherous, especially when you were elderly, as was the case with Naomi. So Naomi decides that her only hope for survival is to make the dangerous journey all the way back to her homeland, hoping that there she'll find some surviving relatives who have pity on her and take her in and provide for her. Meanwhile, Naomi says to Ruth, "You're young, you've got life ahead of you. Go back to your parents. They'll find someone else for you to marry and you can get on with your life." But Ruth stubbornly refuses to depart from Naomi. Ruth says to Naomi, "I'm going back to your country with you to make sure that you're provided for." In the words of Ruth 1:16, Ruth says to Naomi, "Do not press me to leave you or turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you die, I will die. There, I'll be buried. May the Lord curse me and more as well, if even death parts me from you." Oh, the gift of someone who refuses to give up on us, who accepts us as we are, who meets us as we are, especially when we're hurting or in great need. Let me close with this. My mom was deep into Alzheimer's. But Dad refused to put her in a care facility. He just couldn't bring himself to do it. And yet, Mom had reached the point where she was virtually unmanageable. And so even though Dad insisted on keeping her at home, he would often get enormously frustrated with it all. I've been in the habit since Mom and Dad moved back from Colorado to Indiana. I've been in the habit through the years of setting aside Sunday evenings to go and visit them, to spend quality time. So on Sunday evenings, I normally make the long drive up to where they live. But as Mom slipped deeper and deeper into Alzheimer's and as Dad grew more and more frustrated, I found myself thinking, I don't want to go. I don't want to be immersed in the puddle of their pain. I mean, life had trapped them. But the scriptures exhort us to be faithful. So I would force myself to go. One Sunday evening, it was time for Mom's pills. Dad gets out the pills. Here, Katie, here are your pills. But Mom is suspicious. Suspicious that he's trying to give her something bad. Katie, take your pills. No. Katie, I said take your pills. I could see fear flashing in her eyes. It was clear to me she didn't know who he was. But he refused to accept that. It was easier for him to rationalize that she was just being stubborn than to accept that she didn't know who he was anymore. Katie, I said take your pills. He starts to force a pill into her mouth. She hits him. He yells, curses. And I'm standing there. What'd he do? Dad, it's okay. Here, let me try. He pounds the pills in my hands, sits down and says, see what I have to live with? Mom, I said, it's okay. These pills will be good for you. Will you take one? She smiles and takes one. Because she can't remember what happened 10 seconds ago. Dad mutters about how difficult life is. And I'm thinking to myself, if I was a bird, I'd fly away. Oh, if I could just be anywhere else, but immersed in their great pain. I would leave those evenings stressed out. And yet still, there was something inside me that sensed that my presence there in their pain was a great gift. Like food to that lizard, it helped keep them alive. It helped them to get through it. I love what Andy Crouch once said about the hours he spent with a dying friend. Andy Crouch put it this way, it was one of the hardest places I've ever been. It was one of the most holy places I've ever been. It was one of the best places I've ever been. Look inside yourself, and you will find there a mystical, miraculous power to do whatever you need to do to care for and love someone who really needs you. Who is it that really needs you in your life right now? Maybe it's a stranger on the bus trying to make his way home. Maybe it's a spouse or a friend battling illness or disappointment or their own inner demons. Maybe it's an adult child who's pushed you out of their life, but still you wait quietly and patiently, refusing to give up hope that someday there can be reconciliation. Maybe it's a differently abled child who requires intensive care, or an elderly parent. Who is it in your life that needs you to have the kind of faith that says, I refuse to give up on you no matter what? Lewis Templeton says, A miraculous healing is a small thing compared to the grace that keeps me loving, kind, and caring into the wee hours of the morning. 1 Corinthians 13:7 says, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Do you want to know what it looks like to live a life of faith? Never forget the lizard story. Faith is the stubborn refusal to yield to despair even when life traps us, number one. And number two, faith is also the stubborn refusal to give up on someone else when life traps them. Oh God, help us to live our faith.